Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spark Radio Show, filled with strategies, possibilities, actions, resources, and knowledge that may be the spark of a better solution to ignite a positive change in your life. The number to call if you have questions for Melanie or any of our guests is area code 347-215-8390. Now, here's your host, Ms. Melanie.
Well, hello, and welcome back to Spark Radio. I am your host, Ms. Melanie, and I have a very interesting message that just popped up on my switchboard that says, the show is on, but it's not streaming. So, and it says, waiting for host to call in, which interestingly, there's my number by the host. Kind of love technology when it works, and you got to love it when it doesn't, because it's a series of new adventures. So I may need to bug out and call back in. And in the meantime, I could let Richard just introduce himself, my guest for the week. I'd said it was going to be an interesting show, but I wasn't counting on the technical part of interesting. But I do hope that we have live listeners, so the show needs to be streaming for them. So I am going to encourage you, if you haven't listened to last week's show with Dave, the Chef Sheffield, and his offers, and talking about ingredients for success, I invite you to do that. And Richard, I'm going to say welcome, and I'm going to hang up and dial back in again. So would you mind introducing yourself?
I can absolutely do that.
Okay, well, I'll let you do that, and then I'm going to try and dial in again and see if we can make sure we're streaming.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I'm crossing my fingers. Thanks, Richard.
Yep. Well, today's topic, obviously, as you saw in the title, is Sparks of Taking Risks, and I guess with their technical difficulties, I'm taking a risk here by introducing the show, so bear with me. I have not introduced a radio show in my life, so I'll do my best. But a little bit about me. I grew up in Mason City, Iowa, which is, if you're listening around the world, is in the central part of the United States. It's farm country, if that puts a picture in your mind. Grew up there, and my first big risk that I took in my life was running for mayor when I was only 18 years old. I just graduated college, was still living at home with my parents, and the field was 10 candidates, which was a ton, and imagine that debate that we had to have with 10 candidates and going through 10 different answers, and placed third out of those 10, which was an amazing accomplishment for a guy who was only 18 going up against very seasoned politicians. And so today our focus really is just going to be talking about taking risks, how best to take risks, what you can do to maybe take some more risks in your life or just take advantage of some opportunities and live the life that you've imagined. And that's really what Ms. Melanie's entire series, you know, Spark series is all about. And so I'm excited to be a part of that today, and we'll see if she's chimed in here.
Yes, I have. Thank you so
okay.
much. Okay. So we'll hope that all the gremlins are working in harmony now. And, yes, we are going to talk about taking risks. So I'll have to listen to the recording to hear the introduction I missed, Richard. And, it's always a risk when you use technology. We'll go with that. So
yeah.
Would you describe yourself as a healthy risk taker, Richard?
I think I'm absolutely a healthy risk taker, and it's funny that you asked that because as an athlete, sometimes the risks you take aren't healthy. And a couple weeks ago, I was kind of doing that. I had a foot injury, and I was trying to run through it. And that's not necessarily the smartest thing, but when it comes to life and going after the things that I care about and I'm passionate about and that I want to see happen in my future, absolutely healthy risk taker, because it's the only way, in my opinion, that you're able to achieve the things you want is by taking some risks, putting yourself out there. And that's really when you start to learn about yourself and what your strengths and weaknesses are. You can't do those things if you're just sitting on the sideline of your own life.
Ah, very true. Let's talk a little bit about, since you brought up sports, I'm going to talk a little bit about, you have a passion for tennis.
I do. That was growing up. Well, I played Little League growing up, and that was a sport that, looking back on it, I'm amazed that I stuck with it as long as I did, because it was one of those sports that most every American male will play growing up. And I quit when I was 13 and didn't have a sport, and there was a wooden tennis racket hanging in my parents' garage. And one day I just picked it up and went to the local tennis court by myself, had some old tennis balls, and just started hitting up against the backboard. And so, yes, I think that is the start of my risk-taking in tennis, because I was the only person in my family who was who eventually became a player. I begged my neighbors to go play with me. And tennis, I believe, is not really looked at as the macho sport, the typical male sport for a high schooler. And so, especially being the only tennis player in my family, that was a risk. And playing any sport, anything athletic, is always a risk, because not only do you risk physical injury, but it's, especially an individual sport like tennis, it's all on you. Success, failure, victories and defeats, it's all going to be your fault. And to deal with that is a really tough thing as an athlete. And it's been a fun journey for me to be a player for the past 12, 15 years to watch myself grow as a player and a person.
Ah, and that is a good point when it comes to the sport of tennis, that yes, it does all fall on you. And this thing that you can do your whole life, that's one of the exciting things about that sport.
It is, and I did have an injury a couple of years ago that, again, I tried to play through. It wasn't the smartest healthy risk to take, but I took some time off, and it's actually one of my goals next year to put myself back out there. I'm going to train this winter so I can be ready to be back on court, because it is something that I'm extremely passionate about. And so I'm, again, going to take a risk and risk losing and looking terrible on the court, but I want to play again.
Well, having gone through a couple of knee surgeries myself in my own athletic experience, yeah, that taking good care of those body parts, because they don't last forever, it's really important.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go back to one of the more interesting stories, the experiences that you've had when it comes to taking risks, because you've done something that most people don't even think about doing in their life, let alone doing it when they're a teenager. You ran for the mayor of Mason City, Iowa in 2002.
I did, and looking at that date, that was 7 years ago this week that I decided that I was actually going to do that, and I cannot believe it's already been 7 years, because it really feels like just yesterday.
Yeah, time does seem to go fast, especially as you get older, it goes faster. And so what led to your decision to run in that mayoral race?
Well, it really goes back 4 or 5 years before that. I was in eighth grade, and as part of one of the social studies subjects that we covered, we did a little political government section of that class. And to kind of teach us about the political process, we did a mock election there. I mean, we weren't really going to be elected for anything, but you had to have a campaign manager and a candidate and develop flyers and posters and give a stump speech. And it really just taught us a lot about the process and what it takes and how hard it can be to write a speech that people, especially an eighth grader, are going to listen to. Well, as it turns out, I won that mock election, and I became known as the mayor of room 228, because that was the social studies room. And from there, I just found that I really enjoyed politics and government. And so for the next 4 years, all through high school, I volunteered with campaigns, volunteered with just local party stuff, went to city council meetings, shadowed the mayor and a city council member, our city administrator, and just learned as much as I could, because in politics and government, I found something that I really enjoyed. And through those experiences, I was able to volunteer, work with the city, and got to know the problems and the challenges that our particular city had. And so the situation that came up in 2002 was one where the city mayor was going to resign to take a new position in government. And so it's going to be a special election. And so because it wasn't going to be a full-fledged campaign and it was going to be shorter, I really felt like I could have a chance to share my ideas, to share the issues I thought were important of the day and how best to fix our community and not getting too political, to really play a part in that process. And so for me, the huge risk, obviously, was putting myself out there as an 18-year-old, still living at home with his parents and still going to school, and all those questions about my age and my experience were pelted at me for 4 months. But really, at the end of the day, by the time Election Day rolled around, we had built a lot of support, and people were really impressed with how able I was to debate the issues and explain my positions and have some really well-thought-out positions. And as I said in my introduction, I placed third out of 10, and at my election night party, I was speaking and thanking my supporters and things like that, and I said, yeah, the votes say we lost, but we absolutely did not lose. We won, and it is simply because we have people that care about our issues, to talk to us, to listen to us, and so that in that regard, the risk was absolutely worth it.
That is awesome. Your campaign slogan in that election was "The time is now." How does that apply to your life right now?
Well, I try, and it's funny because it was one of those things that what it meant back then was, for me as a person, the time was now, because who knows if there's ever going to be another opportunity for me to run for office. That was the one that was there right now. And then, you know, the time is now for our community to get better, to get stronger, things like that. And so over the last 7 years, I've really used that as my slogan for me and what I'm trying to do in life. And it's cliche because everybody says it. And a lot of people live it for a couple days or weeks and forget it. But tomorrow's not promised to us. And so if we want to be successful, if we want to live the life that we want and that we dream of, we have to do it now. And there's no reason to not do it now. And so for me, everything I do, I'm looking at it, I've got to do it now. Now, sometimes you say, okay, well, I don't have the resources now or don't have the knowledge now, but I can start today. And that's the important thing, is starting what you want.
And that's such a powerful concept. You can do one thing, one thought, one action in the direction of what it is that you desire. Let's take a look at the risks. What would you say, Richard, is the biggest risk you've taken in your life to date?
Do we have time for an extra hour on the show?
Well, we can have you back again.
Because I think when people really sit down and look at themselves, literally getting out of bed is a risk. I mean, because you can go into work and you can be fired, you can get an argument with your boss, you can, you know, get an argument with your teenage son who doesn't want to get up and get dressed for school in the morning. I mean, everything we do is a risk. But for me, I mean, obviously, I believe my life really started in that campaign, because it was really the first time that publicly I had stood up in front of, you know, thousands of people and said, this is what I believe, and here is why. And for the last 7 years, everything I've done has really come back to what happened during that campaign. And so the overriding answer, the greatest risk I think I've taken, is living the life that I want. And that comes, you know, picking the college I chose, doing what I did for my first job, starting my speaking company, now writing a book that I actually didn't mention in my introduction, so that's a surprise to the listeners. But I think my greatest risk has been living my passions.
Oh, and I love that word. And my regular listeners know we always talk about the importance of passions, and we're going to come back around to that concept towards the end of our interview, because passions are so powerful in driving us and providing the joy that we experience in our life. Speaking of joy, what would you say have been some of your rewards for your healthy risk-taking?
Well, you can look at this two ways, the actual physical tangible rewards and the intangible ones. And I'll start with the intangible ones, because those are the ones that I think really, really matter the most. And so when I look at everything that I've done and the things that I take risks on, the intangible rewards are the lessons I learn along the way, are the things I learn about myself along the way, the people I get to meet along the way. And that's really, like for instance, for our listeners, I met Melanie at a speaking engagement I had earlier this year. And it was a risk that I was taking to go speak at this event and put myself out there and try some new material out. And so these are the rewards that can come from putting yourself out there. And when you look at the, you know, the actual physical, tangible rewards for taking risks, you know, for instance, you know, running for office, the actual reward from that was getting name recognition, was having people call me out of the blue, send me emails, say that they support me, say they're going to vote for me, and you get 614 votes. That's an actual reward. And those things matter, and they absolutely are important to you taking risks and going after your passions. But that cannot be the only thing that sustains you. It has to be these intangibles that keep you going, that keep you passionate about the things that you're taking risks on.
Well, and that's so true because you don't always know what your immediate rewards are going to be.
Absolutely.
And so if you're open to that, then you have an opportunity to notice all sorts of amazing things that can happen, things that you never expected. And I think when we open ourselves up to any way, shape, or form, things can happen, to the possibilities, we enjoy so much more than when we have a narrow view of what things and what our outcomes have to be. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. And that brings up a memory I have right after the election was over. I was 19 by the time election day had rolled around, and I lost. And a couple weeks after that, I got a phone call from a local political activist, and she was a part of this organization. They wanted me to come speak at one of the luncheons. And I said, well, I'm really worn out. By that point, I was getting to the depression stage of losing the election, and that happens to any candidate who loses. They just become really downtrodden and sad about the loss and what could I have done, and you start asking yourself those questions. And I turned her down and I said, I'll call you back if I change my mind. And I eventually did, because that was an opportunity that I didn't want to say no to, didn't know where it was going to go, didn't know, you know, if it was just going to be a waste of a day and things like that. And it turns out that it wasn't, because seeing myself in front of that group of people really got me thinking, hey, I really enjoy doing that, and so how can I find ways to do that? So that's just one of those situations where I had no idea what was going to come of it, and I took the risk, and it's really paid back over the course of 7 years.
Well, we have done a good job of talking about all the benefits of taking healthy risks. Let's take a look at the other outcome option, which could be success. It could also mean failures. Now, personally, I choose to call them learning experiences because it's part of using the reticular activating system of your brain and using positive language, or learning opportunities. So what would you say, Richard, are a couple of your powerful learning opportunities that you've experienced by taking risks, and what did they teach you?
Well, the first one that I've thought about, because obviously a learning opportunity means something didn't go right. You can learn stuff when everything goes perfectly well, but you're more inclined to question things when you aren't so successful. And it was actually, almost 2 years ago now, I was speaking at an event in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and I had a picture up on the screen. And I'd been speaking about people going after their passions and taking risks, ironically. And the picture was of a flower. And a woman in the audience said, because I mentioned that I wanted to start painting, and that was something I hadn't started at that point. And she says, you should paint that. And in that moment, I laughed at her and said, I can't do it. And driving home that night, I got angry at myself, because there I was in front of an audience telling them they should take some risks, go after the things they want to do in life, and stop telling themselves no. And then I was in front of the audience saying no to myself. And so I changed that. I took that complete failure in front of the audience. It's amazing they stayed in the room after I did that. And I decided to start painting. And so from that experience, I've learned you got to listen to yourself and what you're saying. Because if you're not living what you're telling other people, they're not going to listen to you. And so that, you know, that's a very simple example of one of my, as you call it, learning opportunities. Obviously, my athletic career is littered with learning opportunities, and I joke with people that I have definitely lost more matches in tennis than I've won, and that will probably remain the case because growing up, I wasn't that good, and I didn't become even remotely good until my junior, senior years of high school. And so for me, anytime I go into an athletic competition, I'm always trying to learn, always trying something new, trying a new tactic, a new skill that I've been trying to put into my game. And so at every moment in any athletic competition, it's a moment to learn. What did I do not so well on that point, or what did I not do well in that match? And you can broaden that. You can ask yourself, what didn't I do for the last week to prepare myself? And so really those two examples are tremendous learning opportunities.
Oh, they were. And I was checking to myself when you were talking about your response of, I can't, because I had just posted that to my social networks yesterday as my thought of the day was the challenge to eliminate can't from your thoughts and your words and notice how much control you feel, because then you start feeling like the CEO of your life that you really are. Do you find that you use I can't a lot, or do you use other word choices?
I try not to use I can't, because when you say I can't, it's not going to happen. And you know, the example, I hate using tennis examples, but I've got so many of them, and this relates to the power of positive thinking. When I stand at the service line and I miss a first serve, there are two thoughts that can come into my head. I'm going to hit it in, or don't double fault. And every time, never fail, when I think that second one, the don't double fault, what's going to happen? 90% of the time, I'm going to, exactly. And so when I say I can't do something, that's more likely to happen. And so one way I tried to combat this, and I've had people laugh at me, they laughed at me when I did it, on my shoes, I would write positive words. Believe was one of them, potential was one of them, just so that when I, especially when I was serving, I would look at my feet. And it would help put me in the right frame of mind, keep that word can't out of my head, so hopefully I would play better.
Oh, and that's very, very powerful, being able to choose different choices, to be able to say, I choose not to, or I'm investing my resources somewhere else. And you're right. The minute you say, don't double fault, your brain skips the knot and goes, do double fault, and it, yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
We have the situation we want to avoid.
Exactly.
So let's talk a little bit about finding focus, about how that was born, because that's the name of your blog, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So how was finding focus born, and what is your purpose in writing it?
Well, it's been interesting growing up in the really the explosion of the internet and social media. You know, when I was in college, when I first went to college, we didn't have Facebook. And so that was really fun to be part of that explosion of that medium. And so early on, like right when I went to college, I started a blog so that people back home, my family, could follow my daily activities. And 5 people read it. And so I did it because I enjoyed writing. And I enjoyed challenging myself to be creative when the day had been pretty boring, you know. So Finding Focus is a blog that I began about a year and a half ago, and the title comes from my main speech that I give, which is called Focus, Making the Most Out of You. And the purpose of the blog is mainly to talk about personal issues, personal challenges, personal development, to help you find focus, to help you find clarity, to help you find direction in your life, whether that be personally or professionally. Because our lives are so fast. And I make the joke that they're, you know, in our Starbucks in every corner lives. And if you've ever been to New York City, there is literally a Starbucks in every corner when you're walking in Midtown Manhattan. It is so important for us to take the time to focus our energies on ourselves, on our own development, on what we care about, and on taking the risks to make it happen. And so that's where the title came from. And that's really what I enjoy talking about on the blog.
Well, and talking about the importance of taking time to think about what it is that someone wants in their life to get that clarity, because the busyness of the day-to-day tasks and responsibilities can be consuming if you allow them to be, and we don't take the time to get clear on what is it that I want in my life, what are my passions, what are my dreams. And we can wake up 5, 10, 15 years from now and wonder where the time went, because we'd intended to, we meant to do these things, but the action never happened. And so from Finding Focus, there's a weekly email that you send. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, the weekly email began, I'm in my second year now, and it is called Focus on You, aptly named. And the idea came from the workshop, where I believe most people have heard this, what I'm going to say next, that for every challenge you're having in your life, someone else has had that challenge and they figured out how to beat it, overcome it, get around it, be successful through it. And my goal in the activity I do in this session is to find a way to connect those two people. And it usually doesn't happen in that simplistic form. So what I try and do is get my audience members and anyone who subscribes to share a lesson that they've learned in life that other people can learn something from. So someone in their similar situation can take what they learned and apply it to themselves. And so what I do, I send out a weekly email once every Thursday, and it's a very quick read. It's someone's very simple, probably one sentence or two, life lesson. And I give a couple quick sentences on how this can apply to your life, what you should do about it to integrate it into your thinking, so that, because oftentimes you're not struggling with it right now. It could be a year from now. It could be 5 years from now. But if I can get you to get that locked into your brain, this person's lesson, you're more likely to pull it out when you need it. And so it's been a really enjoyable learning experience for me, because not only do I get to learn from everyone, but I get to share that with other people. And it's exciting, because some of these life lessons that people share are very, very personal. And they're taking a risk by sharing it. But because they've learned something from it, they want to share that knowledge with other people. And that's really inspiring for me.
And it is for the people who read it, because I get that every week. That was one of the gifts that you gave from that session at the Beyond Rubies conference where we met. If someone's interested and they want to get that quick Focus on You weekly email, Richard, how do they do that?
Well, there's a lot of different ways. If you go to my website, which is just richarddeter.com, on the right side there's a button where you can click sign up, and it takes you to a quick, easy form, email address, and that's it. Very easy. Or if you go to my blog, I post it up there, you know, every Thursday morning as well, and there's a sign-up link there as well. So it's extremely easy to get to. And if they still can't find it, on my website, richarddeter.com, there's a contact button. Send me a message, and I'll get you there.
And Richard's email, or I'm sorry, website is in the show notes, but it is Richard, R-I-C-H-A-R-D, Dieter is D-E-D-O-R.com. So I invite you to check it out, because it's amazing some weeks how timely and synchronistic those messages can be. And people do, if they have learned a lesson through hardship, it helps them feel better to know that they can help someone else. And so that's part of one of the gifts that you give by offering that service, Richard. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you.
Okay, well, let's move to, as long as we're on the topic of writing, the topic of your book, Anything is Possible, which is set to come out in early 2010. Now, people who read emails or newsletters from me or have seen PowerPoints at webinars, I'm a quote queen. I love people's inspirational words. And the one that I had put in the email that I sent you with the questions for the interview was, things are only impossible until they're not. And that was from Jean-Luc Picard in Star Trek The Next Generation. So how timely was that connected to? That was my thought for the day today. Let's talk about Anything is Possible.
Oh, well, what a journey it's been to write a book. Let me just say that. And the idea for Anything is Possible has been in my head for 3 years, 4 years, when one of my best friends mentioned a phrase to me. And it just has sat in my head and fermented. And finally, a little more than a year ago, I was like, you know what? I want to do something with this idea. And so I just sat down and penciled out what I thought a book could look like using this concept, this idea, these three very simple words. And from there, and it was about a year ago right now, where I made a schedule, a writing schedule, and stuck to it and wrote the book. And it's in the final editing stages right now, getting the cover designed as we speak. And I know I went through it very quickly, but it's such a process to take a base idea and really expand it into, you know, 60,000 words that are going to help people, that are going to inspire people, that are going to help people take risks in their lives that for some reason they're not taking. And for me, writing a book was taking the risk, and sitting down and penning the book was, I mean, I could have ended up with 1,000 words and that would have been that, but it's been such a joy to reflect on myself, because the book is not only about other people's lessons and research and you know, the Brett Favre's of the world, but it's also about me. And so I've had the opportunity to reflect on some of my experiences and some of my failures and some of my successes and put those in the book as well. And so putting myself out there again and again in every chapter is a huge risk. But it's been really reflective for me to be able to do that. And so just that journey of anything is possible. I guess I can tell the audience what it's really about if they haven't picked up on it. Obviously, the title, Anything is Possible, it's really just a book that will help you. It'll start with looking at your life today and where you've been, because we can't get to where we want to go in life if we don't know where we've been. We have to look at those failures, look at those mistakes, look at the challenges we've overcome or tried to overcome, and then incorporate those into, okay, how are we going to get what we want? Because we all have dreams, we all have visions, but sometimes we don't have that plan. We don't know how to do it. We don't know how to take that first step, and that's what my book strives to do.
Well, and you also addressed a little bit of my next question, which is, you know, there's risk-taking in putting your stories in the book itself. What are some of the other risks that you would say a potential author would face in that process of writing their first book?
Well, I think the biggest challenge for me to start, I had the idea. Like, how do I turn this idea into a book? How does a movie writer turn a movie idea into a two-hour feature? You know, it is such a challenge to expand on ideas and expand on anything is possible is a very simplistic concept. But to make it complex in a way that you can incorporate into your life was a risk. It was a huge challenge. And I asked all kinds of people for advice, for ideas, for the ways that they were successful. And so that for me at the start was the biggest risk. And now, as I'm nearing the final publishing stages, you know, pitching the book to publishers and finding ways to make it happen and editing. I mean, my goodness, asking people to help edit your project, your baby, is a very emotional process, if you will. And putting yourself out there to them and all of your ideas to them for scrutiny is tough. And then the final risk that I'm going to take is actually, you know, binding the thing and asking people to buy it. And so it's all a big risk as a writer, but it's one that I've enjoyed taking. And I'm excited about helping people achieve what they haven't done yet.
Well, and I think, too, it's that we get so caught up with all the negativity and all the reasons why things won't work, and we have a tendency, if you watch the news at all, to focus on the negative stuff, right?
Right.
And so to be able to spend some time, and again, it's a theme that runs through my shows quite often, and that is that you have that choice of whether to see things as a glass half full or half empty, or someone said, or just get a different glass. So pick the wrong glass, I guess. But when you do that, if you're open to the anything is possible, your brain will work to find a way to make that belief true. Beliefs are very powerful drivers in our brain. And when it comes to that concept, such a timely concept right now with people trying to figure out, maybe they've lost a job recently, or as I was talking to a client, you've been released from that job so that you're open for the next best job. And they're like, oh, that feels so much better. And it's all in the way that we frame things.
Well, and it's interesting you say that, the framing of, you know, the last year has been extremely difficult for a lot of people. And I was on a teleconference back in March, and back in March, I mean, we still didn't know how low things were going to go. And a gentleman chimed in on a conference call and said, you know, our boss had a meeting with us a couple weeks ago. And he started off by saying, I understand you're all worried, you're all nervous. Let me just say this from a management standpoint. A, we're not going to make any personnel changes, and B, we've decided as a leadership, as a company, that we're not going to participate in the recession. And he said that changed the entire tone of the room. Yes, the recession was still going on. Yes, things were still bad. But as a company, they decided they were still going to take the risks they planned on. They were still going to be pushing forward with their goals and their vision. And as a person, even when things get tough, when your successes aren't as many and your failures are mounting, you have to keep pressing forward. You can't pull back.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it is a really good time to begin to do some reflecting to get that clarity that you talked about earlier, that really what is it that people are wanting? What are their dreams? What are the directions they want to go? Because in times like these, historically, are when some of the best new business launches, best new products have come up. I wanted to also mention, because I'm also working on a book and had no idea where to start with the process, and who are listening, Rita Emmett was a guest on my show earlier this year, and she has something called The Procrastinator's Guide to Authorship. And it starts from her first book on procrastination took 20-some years to write. The second book, I know, she says that's so funny. But she said, I think the second book took, maybe it was a year, and the third one 6 months. But what she wanted to do was to help anybody who was writing figure out what she had struggled to figure out. And I'm going to ask you about that in a minute, which is like, you know, do you self-publish? Do you find a publisher? How do you find a publisher? So I do want to mention to listeners that I have a link for Rita's program on brainbonanza.com. So if they go to that site, and it's Get Help Writing Your Book. If you click on that link, it'll take you to Rita's 7-month program that you pay for in 7 payments. You don't pay for it all at once. I want to say it was like $27 a month for 7 months. And she walks you through step by step. So for those of you saying, I know I've got a book, but I'm really intimidated by how to make it happen, I highly recommend Rita because it's helping me a lot. Now, Richard, how did you decide whether to self-publish or how did you find a publisher?
Well, that decision still hasn't been made yet, ironically. I have one publisher who didn't completely reject me, which was exciting. It was one of those small victories that I had to take. And so that decision will be made in the next couple of weeks. Regardless, it'll come out in 2010. So it wasn't a decision. It was a situation where I researched both avenues. Because especially now, in the last 2-3 years, the self-publishing market has exploded. And it's been really interesting once I decided that I was going to do this project to start researching it and start networking with agents and publishers and reading about the industry and the changes that are going on at publishing houses. And so for me, I guess that first decision wasn't hard because I decided that that would just come with time. It'd be dictated by, you know, the market conditions. It'd be dictated by any publishers wanting it. Because what's happening now is for the, you know, wannabe authors out there and people who are writing now and who want to get published, what's happening is the actual publishing houses are pulling back on how much they do. They're pulling back on advances. They're pulling back on how many authors they sign. And so if you're lucky enough to get an agent, they're having a tougher time making a sale to the publishers. And so the self-publishing avenue is becoming more and more of an option. Odds are you're not going to make it on the New York Times bestseller list. Some have, because quality writing gets you there. It always does. And so for me, my goal isn't to make it to the bestseller list. My goal is to make it to your personal bestseller list, that it helped you out. And that's really helped me in the process, because that was a decision I made early on. Selling 1 million copies is not my goal. Selling 10 and changing 10 lives will make it absolutely worth all the time and energy and sweat and blood and tears I put into it.
That's an awesome perspective to have, and to have the faith that when you get to that point and looking at what the conditions are at that point makes a world of difference. And I'll also share, as a certified passion test facilitator, that when Chris Atwood and Janet Bray Atwood first published the passion test, they self-published. And I think that was a year to a year and a half after they self-published that Hyperion picked it up.
Yeah, and that's oftentimes what happens.
Mm-hmm. So that is a possibility. So for people saying, oh, if I write the book, nobody will read it, well, you don't know that. And again, if you're writing it because you have this message that you think will help people, even if it only helps a few, it's worth sharing.
Absolutely.
That's our words of encouragement to those of you out there who are thinking about writing. And it's an amazing process to go through, too. And having done some editing, not on a book, but on a master's thesis, And really looking at that from that perspective of the person writing it, because you're right, because it's their baby. When you're editing their baby, yeah, it's nice to have those caring people who will be
it is, and I'm going back. Well, I'm going back to a question you asked before. You know, what was one of the risks? And I said putting yourself out there, and I'm in the learning opportunities that came from writing the book. I've learned how to be a better writer from the edits that have come back, and so it's just been amazing. I mean, it's a complete learning experience. It's just a circle that continues. Every time you put yourself out there, every time you take a risk, you can learn a little bit more and get a little bit better.
Absolutely. Oh, my gosh. We've only got 19 minutes left. I should probably put our phone number out there. Goodness, I'm enjoying the interview so much, forgot to look at the time. And for those of you in the chat room, if you have a question for Richard about risk-taking, authorship, we're going to talk about speaking and training in a minute because he does that too. Please type in the chat, or if you would like to ask Richard your question, the number to call is 347-215-8390, and I'll open your microphone by your area code on your phone number. And so, yeah, give us a call because we'd love to hear from you, or type in a chat question. So that said, Richard, we are going to move into another area of your life. Because you've had an interesting path to your current work. You also do speaking and training in addition to your, quote, day job. How did you get involved with the speaking training circuit?
Well, that's another long story that I'll shorten up. When I was in high school, my junior year, I joined the speech team, and I found that I was good at it. I enjoyed getting up in front of the group. I enjoyed the competition. I was good. I made it to Allstate that first year. And so from there, my classmates hated me because every time we, you know, do a class speech in speech class or English class or whatever, I'd always volunteer to go first. And they hated it because I set the bar so high. And I am talking myself up a little bit here, but it was true. And so what happened after that is I knew I enjoyed it and I didn't know what to do about it. Didn't know how to get started, didn't know what I could do with it. And I met a speaker when I was at a conference, and I asked him. I said, how would I get started? Is this something I want to do? And he was absolutely gracious enough to spend hours on the phone with me, just talking through different things and talking through different problems he'd had and lessons he had learned. And so that's how I got started a little more than 2.5 years ago, and it's been a journey, and it hasn't happened as quickly as I've wanted it to, but taking that risk, doing something about something that I was passionate about has made all the difference because I have found in the last 2 years that this is what I want to do, that this is what I want to wake up and work for and put my time and energy into. And starting was taking a huge risk. Continuing with it is a huge risk. But I'm that passionate about it and I enjoy it that much, and that makes all the difference by enjoying it. Taking the risk is so easy.
And that is a very powerful idea as well, that when you are doing what you love, it's not work. It's fun. And while speaking is not for everybody, we know that because, you know, some people are terrified and they'd rather be in the coffin than giving the eulogy. But for those of us who are excited by the opportunity to have light bulbs go off for people or to have our experience or our ideas change lives, it is exciting and energizing, and it's something that we love to do. And if you have a message that you want to get out, and Richard's point is also very good about finding a mentor, asking someone who's doing it, or on LinkedIn there are a number of different groups that you can join and learn, get lessons and share resources from people doing what it is you want to do. And so finding someone who's already doing it is a great way to find out how do I, quote, break into, how do I start doing it. And the other thing is to just start doing it. Start doing it for free to nonprofits to get experience. Richard, when you first started, did you do that?
Absolutely, and I still do it. Any time that I can get up and do what I love is a great day for me. And in addition, I wanted to mention, because I didn't want to come off as though I was a perfect speaker, because I'm not. I learn something new every time I get up in front of an audience. I'm also still nervous every time I get up in front of an audience. That doesn't go away, because getting up there and speaking for half an hour, hour, 2 hours, whatever the time happens to be, is a huge risk. And I will tell you, a year ago, I was at an event for high school athletes, and I gave a terrible presentation. I know it, and I'm sure they felt a little bit of it, and I hated myself for it, because I was there to deliver a great presentation. So every time I get up, I'm still taking a risk. That doesn't go away. But it's a matter of learning from all those experiences and enjoying that journey that you're on.
That is also so true, because no one is, quote, perfect. Even Jack Canfields of the world, who make huge money when they get up to speak, they will have days where they're not feeling well, where the words aren't flowing the way that they would like them to, or they've had a mismatch with audiences. It does happen to everyone. And so, again, the whole point of tonight's show about taking risks is that if you wait until you think that you are, quote, as close to perfect as you're going to be, you're cheating yourself and you're cheating the people who could benefit from your gifts if you wait. Because part of the joy in the journey is the experience, and you get better every time as long as you're willing to look at what went well, what can I do better, and then to implement those changes. Now,
absolutely.
Yeah, as our time is down to, oh my gosh, about 12 minutes left. Oh, time flies when we're having fun.
Absolutely.
You have brought up passion several times, and so you do have a number of your passions in your life. You are doing what you love. Is there anything that's missing, any passion that you don't really have in your life yet?
It's a funny question, because if I knew that I didn't have it, I'd be doing something to get it. I really can't think of anything right now that I want in my life that would be a passion that I'm missing, because anything that I love doing, whether it be reading or working out, running, writing, talking to people, I'm doing. And that's the important thing. You have to make the time for the things you're absolutely passionate about. And I make sure that I do that. Some weeks it's better than others. Some weeks I'm so focused on writing or editing the book or you know, traveling, I don't have the time. But then I come back and I make up that time. So I can't find anything that I want to add some passion to.
Well, that's great. And as you continue your journey, whether as your situation changes, you discover new interests, new passions, you will find a way to have them in your life, because that's part of who you are now. And it can be for anyone to be living that joyful, exciting life because you're doing what you love. And whether it's with Richard's resources or if you'd like to learn about the passion test, check out brainbonanza.com to help get you clear on your passions, because some of us have forgotten them. We've gotten involved again in that busyness and the, quote, responsibilities of family and work that we haven't taken the time to pursue those things that we love. How important do you think passion is to success, Richard?
Well, when I saw that question on your potential list of questions that you sent me, I was asked that question only slightly differently a week ago. We were editing a section of the book, and it was not well written. And so one of my editors just asked me a couple of questions and, you know, typed it all out and sent it back to me. And I've used that in the book. And so to answer that question, I absolutely think passion is a critical element in any success you're going to have. And the reason it was asked was because I was writing about my tennis experience, but any time that you're doing something that's not, you know, making dinner or whatever, that you know, it relates to one of the things that you do enjoy, if you're not completely passionate about it, think of it this way. Are you going to give 100% to it? Are you going to give your whole heart to it, all your energy, all your knowledge, all your brain power, all your physical energy, and your time? I don't think you're going to. And the results are going to show that. So to me, when I decide that I'm going to do something, that I'm going to make it one of my passions, the risk involved is putting everything that I am, all my time, my energy, my resources, into it. But you have to do that. Otherwise, you're not going to get the level of success that you're going to want or expect.
Very true. And I think people who are enjoying their success are doing what they're passionate about. There are people experiencing success that are not enjoying it. And so that's the powerful choice you can make. That's my word of the night, is powerful, I'm noticing. That when you're passionate, you enjoy the process, you enjoy the journey, you enjoy the steps along the way. When you're just going through the motions, you're right, you don't bring your whole self, your best self, to the process. And you may experience success on some level. It's just not going to fulfill you at the heart level if you're not passionate about it. Anything else that you wanted to add about taking risks? Because we are now down to less than 10 minutes. I will ask you, while you ponder that, if there's anything else, if listeners have questions for you later, because a number of folks who are in different time zones around the world, or they have commitments at this time in their calendars, will listen to this interview later in the archives. They'll download the podcast. And if they want to contact you, how do you prefer they do that, Richard?
Well, people can find me any number of ways. They can go to the website. They can go to the blog. Like I said before, on the website, there's a form they can fill out. Very simple. They can email me. It's richard@richardbedore.com. They can find me on Twitter, which is just my first and last name. Facebook. I mean, I'm out there, and I'm really easy to find. Doesn't matter if you want to talk to me. If you find one of the ways, I'll talk to you back.
Right. And so, start with the website, which is in the show notes. And you'll find ways to contact Richard there. And again, all over social media, as many of us who are in. It's amazing to be connected and to be able to inspire people, so many people from all over the world, whether it's with Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, or Blog Talk Radio, to do a radio show every week. It's been an exciting journey to get feedback from people. Speaking of feedback, Richard, is there any particular piece of feedback that comes to mind about something that you've done that's changed someone's life? And that was not on the question list.
That is a tough one. I think that it's not one thing. What does happen sometimes is I'll even get my friends who say this, but just people who have heard me speak or who've read one of my blog posts, I will get messages periodically that say, this is exactly what I needed today. I was in such a bad place, and this changed my mindset, and I was able to have a better day. After a session about a year ago, I did get a message from one of the participants, and she said that it was a stress management session, and she wrote me, and she said, you know, I'm looking at things differently. I'm not as worked up about things as I used to be. We're building a house, and I'm not stressed out about it, and just went on and on about how her outlook and her attitude had changed. And for me, that makes everything worth it to hear that.
Well, congratulations. I hope you continue to hear that, because for those of you that haven't heard Richard in a presentation, I highly recommend, if you get an opportunity, because the energy, the passion, the laughter, and the excellent content, it's a powerful, there's that word again, experience. And so I encourage you to hear Richard whenever you have an opportunity. In our final few minutes, Richard, what key ideas would you want my listeners to take away from our interview tonight?
Well, I think there are a couple, obviously. One we just kind of touched on about, you know, how does passion correlate to success? And just to touch on that again, to reiterate, because I think it is so important, you have to be passionate about what you're doing. And oftentimes, to take action on your passions, on the things you care about, it involves you taking a risk. You know, whether it was me picking up the paintbrush for the first time in my life, that was a huge risk. No training, nothing. And what I didn't tell you about that story before about me saying I couldn't paint that flower, I eventually did paint it, and it is the best painting I have ever done because I was focused on it, I was passionate about it, and I wanted to prove myself wrong. And that really leads me to the second and final thing that I want to make sure people remember from tonight. When you take risks in your life, make a mental note of this, you're going to fail, guaranteed. There, there's no way to figure out the mathematical equation on this one, but I believe that 99.9% of the world's population throughout their lifetime will fail more than they succeed. So, because of that, we have to take all of our failures, and mine have been many, and learn from them, and take those and pour those into the lessons that are going to help us be successful when we take the risk the next time. And that is absolutely, in my opinion, how you achieve what you want to achieve, how you live the life you want to live, is taking those risks, taking a chance, taking that first step. And I know it's hard and it's scary, but it's absolutely worth it.
And if you can find a wonderful support person or team or resource on your journey, absolutely invite them along.
Absolutely.
Where is that written that you have to do it alone? Somewhere we got that weird idea that, A, we weren't supposed to make mistakes, and B, we had to do it by ourselves. I'm not sure where we got that, but for many of us, that's one of the limitations that we put on ourselves. And from our discussion tonight, talking about taking healthy risks and knowing it's okay and you will have challenges, barriers, obstacles, failures, learning opportunities, however you want to frame them, and that each step gets you closer to the success that you're trying to create. And so, Richard, I thank you so much for sharing your journey and perspectives on taking risks and passion and success. And we'll look forward to your book, Anything is Possible. And I'd love to have you back when your book comes out and we can talk further about that philosophy of anything is possible.
Well, I'd love to be back. Thanks for having me. And again, it's easy to find me online. The link, like Ms. Melanie said, it's on the information page on her website. Find me anytime. I'm happy to talk.
And that is so true. It has been such a pleasure having you, Richard. Thank you again so much. And listeners, the challenge always that I leave you with is to take one action on something that you've heard, whether it's visiting Richard's website at richarddieter.com, whether it's subscribing to Focus on You, whether it's taking one step towards something that you've always wanted to do and held back from doing. Whatever it is, take one action. Because only when you take action, will you begin to achieve the life that you desire and deserve. Thank you again so much, Richard, for being here. It's been a pleasure having you and sharing you and your work with listeners around the world. I wish you continued success. I know that you'll have it, and continued learning opportunities, because you'll have those as well.
Well, thank you, and I hope everyone has a fantastic evening.
Thank you. And then next week, I'm still working to confirm Ms. Becky McCrary, who is a speaker and author, and her areas of expertise are service and networking. So I'm hoping to confirm her. Check back to see which of the wonderful people will be joining us to share with you those sparks to help you create the life that you desire and deserve. Until next time, take action and stay safe.
Thank you for listening to Spark Radio with Ms. Melanie. Please share this show link with those you believe would enjoy and benefit from listening. We invite you to join us for upcoming shows with special guests and more sparks. May a spark you heard ignite a positive change in your life. Good day.